Hello, and welcome to episode 22 of Cavalytics. We are a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a Clevelander now living in San Francisco, forced to suffer the cruel and unusual torture that is the Warriors' historic play. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT who should probably consider changing his focus to basketball studies. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going well. How about you?
It's going very well. The Cavs just won. They just beat the Atlanta Hawks in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Semis, 121-108, and looked good doing it. Let me finish introing here. So our podcast is hosted on SoundCloud and is available on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcasting app is. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. We've been receiving a bit more feedback lately, which is nice. I wouldn't exactly call it a flood, maybe a meandering stream. But in any case, it's great to hear from you, and we're going to attempt to address as many questions from listeners as we can on the show. All right, so back to the matter at hand. The Cavs, they won 121-108. They were down 8 at halftime, and then with a sort of impressive shooting barrage, pulled it out. How did you feel about tonight's game?
I have a question for you before that.
Sure.
Should we officially change our city's name to Threveland instead of Cleveland?
Yeah, great question. So the Cavs made 21 threes. I had them at 20. They made 21 threes. The previous record for threes in an NBA playoff game was 21. They, of course, broke that in Game 2 by making 25, and then tonight they made 21. They were 21 of 39, so again, shooting 54% from three. Incredible.
Yeah, so I think the previous record was 20 before the playoffs started. Then Cavs tied it with 20 again.
Right.
Against the Pistons. Then the Warriors beat that by 21. Then the Cavs beat it by 25, and now they tied it again. Or now they're second again with 21.
Right. I mean, I had sort of like a lightning round of things I wanted to ask you later, but let me just do part of it now. So how many threes do you think the Cavs will make in Game 4?
Yeah, I don't believe in, like, I don't think they're due for a cold shooting night, right? Because that's just incorrect.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with, like, 14 as the over-under.
Okay. So that would be a little bit more. I think their season average was 11. And so that would be a little.
They're shooting more, too, though, right?
Right. I mean, this appears to be a new strategy or an adjustment to their strategy that is, intentional. So do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And I think basically when this team was put together, especially after we got JR and then once we got Channing Frye at the trade deadline this season, this is kind of what I anticipated. LeBron surrounded by like three or four shooters. Not perfect D, but just amazing high-flying offense.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're seeing in this round. So the Cavs have an offensive rating before this game of 118. And I'm pretty sure that went up today because obviously, they were amazing again tonight offensively.
Yeah, they scored 121 points. They had 85 shots and 18 turnovers. So it will go. It was 118. I think it's going to be right around 118, actually.
Yeah, the thing is, and that's with 18 turnovers, right? So you can imagine if they didn't have 18 turnovers.
Right.
Or
but they also had 18 offensive rebounds. So
it depends
how you're counting possession. So it might actually bump up a little bit. We'll have to see.
That's correct. Either
but in
way,
any
yeah.
case, 118 O rating is like historic.
That's
right?
The best
right.
ever, obviously. I mean, I don't think it's sustainable.
Well, I mean,
think
we're 7-0 and we're sort of blowing, the barn doors wide open. So, yeah, I mean, there's obviously some sample size things, but that's why I thought it was a good question. So the Cavs have made, record numbers of threes in the first seven playoff games. They said something like, on the broadcast today, that the record for number of threes in a five-game series was 60, and the Cavs broke that halfway through Game 3.
So they have 61 now, if I'm
right,
correct.
Right. Yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, look, part of this is the new paradigm in the NBA, is everybody shooting threes. And it took the Cavs a little while to embrace that, but I'm glad they have. I mean, this is the key to beating a team like the Warriors or Spurs. It's, drive and penetrate and dish out to the shooters.
Obviously, they're not going to keep shooting at 50%. 50-plus percentage.
Yeah, 55.
But I think 40, 42 is actually pretty attainable for the Cavs. Because just let's just go through the list, right? Love is a 37% shooter career. JR is a 40% this season, career 38. Kyrie Irving, 38, 39%, 40% last, 42% last season. Matthew Dellavedova, 41%. Channing Frye is a career 40% shooter. Richard Jefferson has been 40% for the last 2 seasons. Obviously, James Jones has always been a great shooter. Mo Williams has always been a great standstill shooter.
Yeah, I mean, you're cherry picking the numbers there a little bit. You're using career where it helps and this season where it helps. But the point is, they do have a bunch of guys who have the potential to shoot well. And this is the thing that I something that has sort of confused me about LeBron James. Like, I would expect that people that play on LeBron James teams have their volume go down, but their efficiency go up. And we hadn't really seen that until sort of recently. Or, you see it in fits and starts, but not consistently. And the reason why you would expect that is because LeBron draws so much defense and is such an outstanding passer that you would expect that the shooting opportunities that the people around him are getting are better. And we've finally started to see that, these first 7 games of the playoffs, everybody is shooting way beyond their sort of career averages. So, I mean, it's incredibly encouraging.
I would say the only people who didn't shoot too well or like below their career averages in the season were Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, and both of them were coming off injury, so it's kind of hard to calibrate, based on the regular season.
No, you're absolutely right. It's tricky to tell,
Like Kyrie did not look like himself in the regular season. I'm going to be honest
right.
with you. I think we've talked about this before,
Yeah.
but he's looking much more like himself now.
Yeah, he had a stretch. So he was 4 of 5 from three again tonight. He was 4 of 5 of 3 in game two. Obviously, shooting 80% from three is good. I thought I was frustrated with him in the first half. I think he, through midway through the second quarter, he hadn't even scored yet. But he carried the. I mean, so the Cavs went into halftime down 8, and then the Warriors, the Hawks pushed it out to maybe 9 or 10 after the Cavs had cut it to 3, and it seemed like the Hawks might pull away, but Kyrie put up some a couple crazy threes in a row, and they went in, and they sort of pulled away from there. But it does seem like that Kyrie Irving, who can just sort of take over a game offensively, and it doesn't matter how well he's guarded. At least is almost back.
Yeah, I agree. And just to quantify how much win probability he added today, it was 21%. That's really high.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's really
Basically, he made
good.
shots when we needed him to make shots.
Right. Do you want to explain for our listeners quickly how win probability works?
Yeah, so it's basically, it looks at the flow of the game, and it looks at what point you're in the game, who your opponent is, where you're playing, so it's either a home game or an away game. And then it looks at kind of the flow of the game. So if you're scoring a lot or not scoring a lot, and it just kind of, I'm sorry.
Do you know what data set it's using? Like, is it using throughout NBA history? Is it using the last 10 years? Or what's the data set they're using for
I'm
that?
not sure, honestly. I need to ask them about it. But it's the website is inpredictable.com, and they have these live as well. So as you're watching the game, you can keep up with how the game is going and see how it's going.
Right. So just by way of example, so let's say it is 95-85 with 2 minutes left in a game. The team that's up 95-85 has a very strong chance of winning. Like, let's say, I don't know what it is. They probably have around a 92-93% chance of winning that. Maybe even more. It's probably more like 97% if you're up 10 with 2 minutes left. In any case, let's say the team that had 85 points comes down and makes a three. So now they're down 7 with approximately the same amount of time left. There's a change in win probability there, and that change in win probability, if you sum those up for all the shots that a player makes, can give you this win probability added. Is that
Exactly.
basically how it works? Okay, so
Yeah, it is.
Kyrie Irving's tonight was 21%.
That's because he made the shots in sort of high leverage situations
Right.
when we needed him to. So when the score was tied, that can swing the win probability a lot more
Right.
than, when the Cavs are up by like 20. That doesn't do anything.
Right. Close and late win
Exactly.
probabilities change obviously more than not close in
And the
NBA.
highest you can imagine was Channing Frye at 39% because he just didn't miss anything.
That's incredible. Yeah, so
He had a. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not sure if we'd mentioned Channing Frye yet. So Channing Frye tonight played 28 minutes. There were sort of two reasons for that. One, his offensive numbers were incredible. I'll get into those in a minute. Two, Tristan Thompson was a little bit maligned tonight. The Hawks decided to foul him quite a bit, and he wasn't shooting great from the free throw line. He was also just one of six from the field, and he had four turnovers. He struggling
looked off.
A bit.
He
yeah.
looked pretty off today.
So the Cavs played a lineup with a lot of Channing Frye and what's the guy's name? Kevin Love. And anyway, so Frye finished 10 of 13 from the field, 7 of 9 from 3. He was plus 28 in a 13-point win. He had 7 rebounds and 27 points. Not
His
bad.
True shooting percentage was 104, FYI.
Yeah, that's scintillating.
On an amazing volume, 27 points.
Right. Yeah, he was incredible. I don't know... I mean, look, his thing is catch and shoot threes, and he got a lot of those tonight. He took 9, made 7. We've been sort of banging the drum for him to get more playing time since the Cavs traded Anderson Varejao for him. And through either luck or circumstance or cosmic rays, Tyronn Lue finally decided to give him a lot of burn, and boy, was he rewarded.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as much as Cavs fans... miss Anderson Varejao, I think Channing Frye has been an amazing addition, and I'm sure he's going to keep helping us throughout this playoff run.
Yeah, he's particularly good against teams like the Hawks because the Hawks do not rebound very well.
Right.
And so what Frye gives up, what you give up with the difference between Tristan Thompson and Channing Frye's rebounding is sort of mitigated by Atlanta being terrible at rebounding. Just to illustrate that, the Cavs had 65 rebounds tonight. Atlanta had 34 rebounds tonight. I mean, just total domination of the glass. It was shameful, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think I kind of mentioned this to you while we were watching the game, that Cavs need to keep trying that Frye Love lineup and see how it's going to do. I think we're going to need a lot of iterations to see whether it can stand up defensively and on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very important in the finals to have all these different things that you can go to if something's not working out.
Yeah, you want to have a Swiss Army knife of lineups
exactly.
That you can sort of...
just kind of keep changing them throughout, because if they get you... Because obviously the Warriors are a very, very smart team, and if they get used to you, they will catch up and they will learn how to defend you.
Yeah, they're extremely well coached, and... Yeah, if you find something that exploits them, you know, you can expect them to adjust, and if
they'll adjust and fix it, and then you got to throw something else at them in the next game.
Right. Let's see what else happened tonight. So, do you think that there's been some talk over the last 2 or 3 days? So, I think ESPN reported this initially, or maybe somebody on Twitter found it, but for teams that go up 6-0 or 7-0 in their first 6 or 7 games in the playoffs, they actually have a really bad history of...
Oh, yeah, I saw that. They lose
forward.
In the conference finals, yeah.
Yeah, so I think there have been 6 or 7 teams that have done this, gone 7-0 through their first 7 playoff games, and none of them have won the NBA Finals. I have an opinion on this, but let me get yours before I bias it.
Correlation does not equal causation.
Yeah.
This is meaningless to me.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that there's another stat out there. If you lose your first game of the season, no team that has lost their first game of the season has won the NBA Finals in the last 10 years. Obviously, it's meaningless. It's just something that's happened.
Well, good thing the Cavs won their first game.
No, that they lost. They
oh,
lost to the,
no.
the Bulls.
Oh, yeah,
even the Spurs lost their first game. Only the Warriors won their first game. Obviously.
Oh, well, thank God for them. I mean, should we just stop now, since it's ordained?
Right, exactly. Like these stats are meaningless to me.
Yeah. I want to be careful with the word meaningless. I do think. Well. Yeah. Let me ask you your opinion on this. So I do think there could be an effect where if you keep beating up on the middle school JV team, you lose your edge a little bit, your sharpness, your ability to sort of deal with adversity. That's like a hypothesis you could make.
Sure.
I'm just not sure. I don't know how you test that because there's so much noise, right? And I'm not sure I actually believe that anyway. Like, I think a counterargument could be the Cavs are generating like incredible sort of cohesion and developing lineups that really work well together and are actually strengthening as a team. So I'm not concerned about it. Sounds like you're not either.
No, not at all. I mean, I agree with the arguments. I think it could be argued either way. Honestly, I don't think it's going to be the case for us.
So
I think if the Cavs lose in the playoffs, it's going to be in the finals. I mean, the series, obviously. I think they can lose a game in the next series.
Right. Okay, so that's the macro. Do you think that it was good that the Cavs, you know, I don't know if good's the right word. Do you think it put hair on their chest to get down 8 or 9 in
yeah.
this game?
Yeah. I was actually kind of excited to see how the Cavs were going to respond in the fourth quarter.
I don't know if
I wasn't really worried, but it was just something I wanted to see for a while because it hasn't happened since the Pistons series.
I was definitely worried. Like I wasn't happy with the way the second quarter went. I think the Cavs were down 13 in the second quarter. And then they chopped it down to 8 at halftime, and then they got down, they trimmed it down to 3, but then the Hawks pushed it back out to 8 or 9. And at that point I was thinking, I don't know what the win probability was at that moment, but I think the Cavs, I thought they were going to lose. And
so I have the numbers right now. So
okay,
at the end of the third quarter, the win probability was 30% for the Cavs. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So my
intuition at the end of half, it was 34%, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't feeling good about it, and now it's easy for me to say in retrospect, like, oh, that was great. I was really excited to get that opportunity. In prospect, I was not super pumped about it. But it made the fourth quarter a lot of fun as the Cavs sort of tied it up and then pulled away.
Yeah, I think just like watching the game, it felt like Cavs were pretty loose on D through the second and third quarters. They were sagging off of a lot of guys and daring them to shoot, and they kept making them. I think there was a pretty quick adjustment that they could have made in the fourth, and they did that. So,
yeah.
I mean, even the Hawks have been shooting the three well. It's not just the Cavs, right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's see. The Hawks tonight were 16 of 34. That's 47.1%.
Huh. Yeah. Boy, yeah, I'm just looking at the box score here. The Cavs were, they played sort of sloppy in the first half.
Very sloppy. They had like, turnovers?
They finished with 18 turnovers. I thought they had 11 at halftime, but I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, I meant the first quarter. I thought they had 8 or something.
Oh, that could be. That could be. Yeah. They looked like they were sort of sleepwalking a little bit out there. LeBron didn't look particularly engaged. He got engaged late, but in the beginning, he was a little sort of lackadaisical.
I'm not really worried about this because, like, come finals, he's going to be engaged, obviously.
Yeah.
He knows the team we're going to be facing is going to be very good. So,
yeah, I think you're right. Another sort of subpar shooting night for Kevin Love. He was 5 of 12 from 3, but he was 7 of 17 from the field. Again, he's getting plenty of shots. We talked a little bit about this last episode. My take was I'm okay with him.
I don't think it was subpar. It's 50 a true shooting percentage.
Yeah.
He could have been better near the basket, but I thought, I mean, he's still above 55. My kind of baseline is like, as long as you're above 54, which is league average, that's a good night.
Let me reframe the question then. So I agree. He did have now that you mention it, he did have an above average offensive night. 58% true shooting is good. Are you concerned that he's looked a little bit soft or uncomfortable around the rim over the last sort of 3 or 4
That's off,
games?
But I think he's overthinking it. I think when he goes for a layup, he kind of chucks it up because he's worried about getting blocked.
Yeah.
And then it usually just kind of bounces off or misses and just goes the other end. And he's not a very athletic guy, as we all know. So dunking isn't that much of an option for him.
Yeah.
So I think he needs to start pump faking a little more, get guys off balance, and just draw the foul.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I was trying to see if you wanted to play foil here and say that you were worried about it, but I'm not worried about it either. I think he's going to figure it out, basically.
So career-wise, he's been at 60% near there, which is pretty
good.
So
right.
I'm not too worried, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay.
It just seems like an off few games.
I agree.
His three-ball looked good again. He was, what, 5 of 12?
5 of 12, yeah.
He had kind of weird misses at the end. I don't know if you noticed that.
He did. He had an air ball from, what do they call it, the bend? Not the corner and not the straightaway three.
Above the break?
Above the break three, yeah. He had an air. I don't know if it was an air ball, but it was close to an air ball. And then he had one from the corner that looked sort of awkward. But
the corner one, I think, happened because someone closed out on him and he had to, like, alter his shot.
Okay,
at the end.
Yeah, he had to change the trajectory or something. But then he swished the next one. It was interesting. So Arnav sometimes watches the games on delay, and we're always IMing each other during the games. And you had messaged me that you were bummed that he had missed that corner, but I had already seen the next one. And so I was sort of unable to stop from spoiling that for you. I apologize.
What did you think of their adjustment starting Tabo Cephalosha for Kyle Korver?
Well, I don't think they're going to do that in game four. I think the theory there was they didn't like how J.R. Smith went off in game two. J.R. Smith was 7 of 13 from three. And so they decided to start. And Kyle Korver, who was an all-star last
year. Had
like
one shot in the first game.
Yeah, and had been looking sort of out of sorts offensively. They decided that they wanted to get somebody who could stick to J.R. Smith a little bit more. So they started Thabo Sefolosha, who, of course, didn't play in last year's series because of some incident with the New York police. In any case, he is playing now, and he started, and he did a somewhat decent job on J.R. Smith. It's sort of hard to know if he did a good job on J.R. Smith, or if J.R. Smith was just not looking for a shot as much tonight. But
he looked a little passive today. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah. Smith.
You said he had some injury, right?
Well, he sprained his ankle toward the end of the game. There was sort of a funny incident where the Cavs were coming down on offense and they had sort of like a semi-break. And he seemed to have tweaked his ankle maybe on defense the previous possession. I didn't see him tweak the ankle, but I saw him limping down the court and he sort of limped into the corner to hide. And then immediately, I think LeBron found him because he was wide open in the corner and he passed it off because...
Yeah, he passed it to Love, and then Love, someone closed out on him, and then he passed it to Channing Frye, who hit the three again.
Okay, so it worked out in the end. But no, J.R. Smith's fine. He just tweaked his ankle briefly.
Because, as you know, he's very important for our offense.
Right. Yeah, so he was 2 of 4 tonight. All of his shots were threes, 6 points.
Yeah, I thought he didn't do a very good job defensively on Korver. And I don't think Shump did either. I thought they were setting a lot of screens for Korver, and he kind of got off a little bit.
Yeah, Korver was 6 of 11. He was 5 of 9 from 3. He made his one free throw. He had 18 points. That's obviously an outstanding game.
It's an 82 shooting percentage.
Yeah, I thought 2 or 3 of his threes were of the sort of, well, you just got to give them to him variety. But there were 2 or 3 on the other hand that I thought could have been defended better. And yeah, that's on Shumpert and Smith. And they'll tighten that up. I mean, look, the previous game, Korver took one shot, so it's a little hard to hold them like in too.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not blaming them. Anything.
Yeah, I mean they probably like adjusted their game plan a little.
I think
bit
they adjusted well.
About,
yeah.
Yeah, to worry about Korver a little bit less, and then the Hawks adjusted to get Korver some more shots, and yeah, it was just sort of a consequence of both of those two things leading to some badness for the Cavs. What did you think? For the listeners who didn't hear our last episode, there was a segment done by a guy who analyzes the mechanics of people's shot taking, and he suggested that LeBron has been doing something this year that he's fallen into the bad habit of doing in the past, but he's been doing it more this year, and that's when he takes a three, he'll land on his left foot and sort of kick his right foot out a little bit to try to balance to stop himself from falling over backwards. And when he does that, he shoots at a much lower percentage than he does when he takes a balance jumper and lands on both feet. So Arnav and I have been counting LeBron threes and trying to measure the difference. Last game, sort of uninterestingly, he went 2 of 3 on balance and 2 of 3 off balance. So nothing interesting there. But I thought tonight's results were interesting. We don't talk about this before the show, so Arnav, what did you have him at tonight?
So I missed one of the threes. I think I'm told that to you before.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 2 off-balance threes, which he missed. I have 1 balance three, which he made, which was kind of a standstill one, if you remember that one. Like, they left him wide open.
And he got a rhythm dribble.
He got a rhythm dribble. Nice shot. Looked good. Then he had a mid-range at the end as well that also looked balanced to me, and he made that one as well.
Oh, yeah. I've only been counting threes. I do remember that jumper, and I do remember noting it was balanced. So, maybe for the next game I'll count of his jumpers. But in any case, I had him 0 of 3 off balance from 3 and 1 of 1 on balance. So
I have 2 of 2 on balance because of the mid-range. But yeah, it seems, at least tonight, seems to have some effect.
We fixed LeBron's shot. Somebody should call Damon Jones, who's the Cavs' quote-unquote shot coach.
Didn't they just... give him LeBron a contract or something, or hired him?
Yeah, I mean, I thought his official job was being in the background of LeBron's Instagram
photos.
Posts. Yeah,
but he's always there.
He is always there. It's weird. I mean, look, if I had access to LeBron James, I would probably be hanging around and skulking around in the background myself. So I don't want to be too critical here, but it is sort of odd and a little bit embarrassing.
Question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So there were a bunch of possessions where they kept trapping Kyrie and LeBron on the pick and roll. So as soon as like Tristan would come and set a screen, they would trap him
Yes.
so that Kyrie looked a little flustered to me on those traps and really wasn't able to find the open guy. LeBron obviously didn't look that flustered because he's used to it so many times. And he would often pass to Tristan, and then Tristan would make a pass to the corner, and then we kept missing that corner three from the left side so many times. But are you worried about Kyrie not being able to navigate that?
You know, I didn't think about that consciously when watching the game. As you mentioned that, I can remember two specific instances where they trapped Kyrie. So for some of our listeners who may not know, and look, I'm not a basketball coach and I'm no expert here, but I'm going to describe what I think a trap is. So a trap is basically, or typically, when somebody's sort of above the three-point line, maybe there's a pick and roll. So they try and set a pick. And normally with a pick and roll, the defenders will either switch, or the defender who is defending the guy who is going around the pick will go what's called over the pick, which means he goes in between the guy setting the pick and the guy on offense, or he goes under, which means he goes on the other side. Or what they'll do is trap, which is both defenders who are involved in the pick and roll will stay with the person who has the ball. I think I sort of botched that explanation. Maybe I'll try that again in another show. But in any case, the situation ends up where Kyrie has the basketball and he's now being double teamed by his original defender and typically a sort of tall guy. And I do remember twice that happening and Kyrie looking sort of awkward passing out of it. Now, of course, it's easier for LeBron because
He's so tall.
he's 5 inches taller and he's a little bit bigger, so he can sort of see over that. And he's also a bit stronger, so it's, harder to sort of hack the ball out of his hands. But yeah, Kyrie did look awkward on two of those. I don't remember the results of those, but I remember thinking like, huh, that's something they
Couple of
might want
turnovers, I
to,
remember.
yeah, they may want to practice that a bit because he looked, yeah, sort of out of sorts.
Yeah, so they should set. So I think the solution to that is set screen with LeBron's guy. So let LeBron set the screen. Because as then Kyrie can pass it to LeBron, and LeBron can make a much better decision
Right.
than
Yeah.
Tristan Thompson can.
Trapping off of LeBron James is dangerous too, because
Right.
if you trap
He can just
Kyrie,
drive the ball
then
and
yeah,
dunk
you have
on.
LeBron James open running a 4-on-3, and that's not going to go well for anybody.
That's basically what the Warriors do, right? Like people often trap Curry, and then you basically have Draymond wide open in the open court,
Yeah.
and he can do whatever he wants with the
If
ball.
I was in an analytics department, I would want to know like how big a part of the Warriors' sort of success is the simple Steph Curry, Draymond Green pick and roll. So,
Oh, I think that's like most of their clutch or their crunch time offense.
I mean, they should do that every time they come down the floor. It's amazing. Like what happens is either you leave Steph open on the pick, and he's the best shooter of all time, so he can make a three, or you trap him, and now Draymond Green, who's maybe the second
Can
best,
either
or
roll or pop out because he can shoot the three at 38% too.
right. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we'll get to the Warriors when we get to them.
Do you remember that the Sloan Sports Conference where someone made a machine learning algorithm to basically look at all the pick and roll situations in the
Yes.
league and then, yeah.
Yes.
Who was the
Yeah.
worst defender? Do you remember?
Oh
Worst
boy.
defensive combination?
I don't remember. I have interestingly, none of the slideshows for Sloan were actually made publicly available, but I did take pictures of those slides, and they showed who the best pick and roll defenders and the best people on offense on the pick and roll were. Their methodology was a little bit janky, I thought, a little bit sloppy, but a whole lot better than any other of the data that's out there, so I'm glad they're doing it. But yeah, I can't remember, which is making for
Okay.
boring listening here. Do you remember by any chance?
No. I know the best offensive one obviously was Steph Draymond, but I don't remember the
Yeah.
defensive. I think it
Yeah.
was on OKC. Anyway, I'm just
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, just to wrap that up, I mean, it does somewhat validate the study that they found that Steph Draymond was the best, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know something works when it says like LeBron and Steph are sort of the best at something. It's like, oh, okay, well then that makes sense. Let's see. What else did I notice tonight? What do you think of the Hawks organist? So the Hawks have a, instead of having the sort of typical in-arena sound system, they simply have a guy who plays the organ. What do you think of
I mean, I honestly didn't notice him that much, but I've heard good
it?
things about him.
I love it. I think it's awesome, and I
They
think
actually
that.
had an AMA with him on Reddit, on
Really?
the Hawks subreddit, yeah. It
I'll have to
was
check
like
that out.
last year, if I remember correctly.
Although I've heard that the Hawks subreddit can be a little bit of a minefield, so I've been staying
Oh,
away.
yeah, I remember.
So
Are
okay, so
you
you
worried about the turnovers?
no, I thought, well, okay, look, a little bit. I thought the Cavs were sloppy tonight. I would like them to not be sloppy. I think that part of that was just they're up 2-0 in the series. They've been comfortably blowing the Hawks out. If anything, like tonight's result is going to sort of revalidate that, which is they can just turn it on and, you know, scuttle the Hawks ship. But yeah, I thought that the turnovers tonight were sort of a result of laziness, not necessarily trying to do too much or not having a good offensive system. And so I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'm gonna say it's good that it's laziness and not systemic.
I specifically remember two possessions, one where LeBron slipped, which was a turnover, obviously not his fault because he slipped. And one was...
Okay, it is
well, I think
his fault.
you remember when someone was bleeding in that area and they cleaned it up? I think there was some residue left there.
There was some blood on the court that forced LeBron to turn it over.
No. It's just, somebody was bleeding the first quarter.
Yeah, Thabo Sefolosha had that sort of weird hard foul where he landed on the back of his hip and also his elbow.
Because I remember it being exactly in that same location where he slipped. So I think there's something there. But anyway, moving on. And then he had that weird double pass where he, like, traveled.
Oh, right. Yeah, it was on an inbound, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was ugly.
And
yeah,
it was he got the ball. Yeah, someone inbounded the ball to him. Then he like kind of pretended to pass it over, but Kyrie wasn't looking, so he had to grab it again because otherwise it'd be a turnover.
Right, and then it was a turnover because that's a travel. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, LeBron was not focused in the first half, but he got focused late. Nice that he only played. Oh, yeah, a couple things about Tyronn Lue tonight. So LeBron played 38 minutes 58 seconds, and interestingly, the Cavs were down going into the fourth quarter, and they were sort of treading water for a little while at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And this is when, like, typically Tyronn Lue and LeBron James say, well, screw it, I'm just going to come back in and I'm going to play 43 minutes. But they did not do that tonight. And you said something interesting. Do you want to repeat that?
I don't remember what I said.
I thought
he was sending a message, right?
Is that yeah, right? I thought that was sort of an interesting take.
I don't know if it was. I thought he was just trying to actually... Because he brought him back like a minute later. At first, I thought he was going to keep him out for a while.
Yeah.
Because LeBron kind of focused before
when
that.
When you said it, it was an interesting point. There was 10 minutes left in the fourth, and the Cavs had been down 8, and they were still down 8. They'd sort of been treading water. They were about to go on a run, but at that point, they were down 8, and they didn't bring LeBron back in. There was a stoppage in play where they could have, and they didn't do it.
Exactly.
And I thought that was interesting. I think Tyronn Lue thought, look, reflexively, I want to bring him in, and this is what we normally do, but I'm not going to. So,
yeah,
I liked that. I also liked that instead of going to Mozgov, he went with Channing Frye for 28 minutes. It was sort of easy.
Oh, thank God.
Sort of easy because Frye went 7 of 9, but
I know, but thank God that was that's always a good approach. Forget about Mozgov, man.
Yeah.
I love the guy. He helped us a lot last season, but he's been so bad this season.
He has definitely stepped up his cheerleading game. He looks...
Sasha Khan, who's in a suit.
They look good over there, jumping up every time the Cavs do something good. Okay, so before we wrap up, I do have sort of like a lightning round of questions. I only have like 5 or 6 tonight, but do you have anything else you wanted to talk
about? Yeah, I have some other stuff I wanted to ask you.
Okay, go ahead.
So do you think the... Because the whistle, at least to me, looked a little quicker than usual today.
Mm.
Did you notice that as well?
I thought there were some early fouls that were a little bit aggressive. It actually affected the game a little bit. Love had to come out at some point.
He had like 4 or 5 early on.
Yeah. But it ended up with not that many fouls called. There were 21 fouls called on each team. The game was a little chippy early on, so maybe it was good that they were a little bit quick with the whistle.
I thought it demoralized some of the guys, especially Love and LeBron. They seemed a little less aggressive in the middle of the game.
You may be right. I think I agree with that. I mean, they were less aggressive in the middle of the game. I don't know if that's why, but that definitely probably played a part.
And then Tristan had 9 offensive rebounds, but I thought those were pretty empty today. I want to say that because A, he had a lot of turnovers off of them, and B, he got blocked on a bunch of them, and C, when he didn't get the offensive rebound, he was stuck there and he didn't get back in transition, which basically allowed the Hawks to get on that run.
Yeah, so I call that the Tristan Thompson special, which is when he gets an offensive rebound and then just sort of fritters it away immediately. He had a couple of those tonight. It was sort of, he was underwhelming tonight, I'm going to be honest. He was minus 14 Everyone else on the Cavs was a had a positive plus minus.
Besides
Except for,
Richard
yeah,
Jefferson.
except he was -3 in 9 minutes, so whatever. But yeah, Tristan did not have his best game tonight. Also, they fouled him intentionally at least 4 times that I can remember. And they did it
more
at,
than that. Six times. I have 6 times, yeah.
Okay. He shot 12 free throws, and you're right. I don't think he got fouled shooting an actual shot. So yeah, they fouled him 6 times off the ball, and they did it in an interesting way. A lot of times teams wait until they're in the penalty to start doing that. They did it before they were in the penalty by fouling the Cavs before they inbounded the ball. And yeah,
Tristan, it was weird. They would do it like once and then try to score on the other end.
Yeah.
And they kind of got lucky each time that they actually got to score on the other end.
Yeah.
But then they wouldn't do it again.
It was a good strategy for them tonight. It worked well.
It worked, but I don't know if I agree with the process, because he's a 60% free throw shooter. And like, it worked out tonight because they got threes on the other end. That's always a good thing. But I'm not sure. Like, if they did it again next game, I don't think it's going to work, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. The only counter argument is when you're playing a team with a 118 offensive rating.
Exactly. I agree.
Some strategies go out the window. But okay, yeah, in any case, yeah, that happened. You got anything else?
Yeah, I do. So with Love, there was like a stretch, I think in the third quarter, where it was a weird stretch where he got a couple of offensive fouls called. He slipped on the floor in the same spot again where LeBron slipped.
Yep.
And he also got crossed over, so that's different. And he just looked weird during that stretch. Do you agree with that? Like, do we need to be worried about that?
I mean, there's something particularly interesting happened, which is he almost got called for technical foul.
He was pissed
off.
Which is
really unusual for him. But yeah, you know, he figured it out.
I think one thing I want to mention is his defense looks worse than it actually is. I think he's, again, we've talked about this before, he's an above-average defender. But because you have these one or two plays where he either A, is really out of position, or B, is like falling on the ground, which happens a lot, it just looks way worse than he actually
is. Yeah, Kevin Love is one of these players who the optics, when he's playing poorly, make him look like he's playing way more poorly than he actually is. And he did have a stretch like that in the third quarter today where he got frustrated. He did a couple things that were sort of unlike him, and he almost got called for a technical foul when he got called for the foul where he had to come out of the game. I have a sort of counter view to this. I like seeing that intensity out of him. I feel like he has absolutely...
Well, I love it too, yeah.
I feel like he has absolutely shown up for the playoffs. His volume is high. His engagement is high. He had 15 rebounds tonight in 29 minutes. I mean, he's been sort of a monster out there.
And
I think
also had 3 assists in 29 minutes, which is like for him, who usually doesn't get a lot of assists, that's actually a lot.
Yeah. I'm expecting his RPM to go up the next time they refresh it.
And then he had 17 field goal attempts in 29 minutes. So that's probably the highest usage rate on the team.
Yes.
Because of the minutes, yeah.
Yep, you're right. Yeah, that's good. I think that's good.
No, I agree. They've been involving him and he's stayed involved.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, right? Like, if he missed those couple of threes, and if they hadn't given him that last corner three because he missed a couple and you're thinking he's out of rhythm or something, he would have never made that last one. He got it. He made it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all. I mean, I'm glad. I think that the only thing he has right now is upside. Like, there is no downside here. And the level that he's playing at now is already sort of like top 15 NBA player. So keep it up.
Yeah, he's had a double-double every single game.
Yep.
Yeah. And one thing I also want to mention is I'm a little concerned that the Cavs have been a little lazy defending the three-point line. I don't want to call it lazy. I think it's actually part of their strategy to sag off of the guys in this series because they don't have very many good three-point shooters. But I just wish for one game they would defend the three-point line really well so that they can practice for, you know, a potential final series with Golden State.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
I mean, the Cavs objectively have not guarded the three-point line tonight. Throughout the playoffs, the Atlanta Hawks were 16 of 34 tonight for 47% from three. That's unacceptable. And the Hawks are sort of a so-so three-point shooting team, Korver aside. Yeah, I mean, I think this is sort of problematic. I mean, I think you can make an argument that Atlanta fell into bad habits because of the team they played in the first round. So they played the Celtics in the
Oh,
first
they did,
round,
yeah, for sure.
and Olenek didn't play, and Avery Bradley got hurt, and those are, sort of two of their best shooters. So Atlanta's strategy, I think, I didn't watch much of that series. You probably watched more, was to pack the paint, and it worked. That strategy does not work against Cleveland. We just have much, much, much better shooters. But it could be that, like, part of the problem here is Atlanta sort of got used to a scheme that worked well previously, but now is sort of betraying them. And yeah, you wonder if the Cavs are sort of susceptible to the same thing. One
Exactly.
good thing about that is, well, yeah, neither the Raptors nor Heat are particularly good from three. The Heat.
Raptors used to be when Kyle Lowry could shoot, but he's had some elbow issues,
Right.
so
Yeah, but
they're not.
DeRozan can't shoot, and for the Heat, Dragic can shoot obviously, but Wade can't shoot, and Luol is
Heat are
so-so.
really weird. So I've been watching them, and they're a high percentage 3-point shooting team, but they're very low volume. So they'll get like maybe 12 or something, but
Yeah.
they'll shoot at a good percentage. So they'll get
They'll
good
make
shots
six or
in.
whatever, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, so I think that's something to keep an eye on, and I agree with your concern there. It'd be nice to see the Cavs sort of close out a little bit better. But as you said, part of the strategy may be, I mean, look, Al Horford was 11 of 15 tonight. Like, he's sort of a beast down there, and you gotta protect the
Well, he had two
paint.
threes too. I don't know if you saw that, but yeah.
I saw it. I shook my head.
But yeah, like I know it's part of their strategy, but just for one game, maybe their fourth game, where Cavs are pretty much guaranteed to win, I think they should at least try to defend the 3-point line better and just get used to it and kind of get in the flow of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. And then one last thing I want to mention is I thought the Cavs pick and roll defense was really lazy for the first 3 quarters, and they fixed it in the fourth. I thought it was just bad communication, bad positioning. Like Tristan would be lollygagging in the back, Love would miss a switch, Kyrie would just do his usual thing, just get going over the screen or under the screen, but just very lazily. But in the fourth quarter, they completely fixed all those issues, at least from my observation.
Yeah,
It was a good sign to me, at least.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you think that, are you saying that, well, do you think that the Cavs have the athleticism and the sort of ability to play much better defense than they typically do?
Typically, I've seen them play, yeah, exactly. So I think those defense we saw in the fourth quarter, they can play that for 4 quarters long.
Yeah, they
Obviously, it's
could.
going to be much more physically intensive on them.
Yeah, it's tiring.
It's tiring, yeah. And they're going to have to do it, right, in the finals, especially if they run these small ball lineups.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's nice to know that they have the ability. It would be nice to see it used a little bit more consistently, but it's tough. I mean, how do you motivate when you're blowing out a team by, so much? It's tricky.
Yeah, I just thought it was a combination of a kind of like the demoralization I talked about through those whistles. They just looked a little pissed off with those whistles. They got a couple of moving screen calls, and then they also just were bored because they've been blowing this team out.
Yeah.
Either way,
Okay. Yeah.
we can
All
move on
right.
to your questions.
Yeah, let's wrap up with my questions here. Okay, so question one, is Iman Shumpert the highest risk reward dunker in the NBA?
Yes, because I'm always worried that he's going to break his hand or something, or
Yeah, I mean, we
just
know he
completely
broke
miss
his
it.
wrist in the preseason trying to dunk. Like, last season he had like some spectacular failures as well as some spectacular successes. Tonight he had an absolutely ridiculous putback dunk that got it was I think it was in the first quarter where somebody missed and then he like jumped up and one-handed it in. It was spectacular.
You could also make an argument for Kevin Love. Because when he dunks, it's amazing because everyone gets excited because he doesn't do it very often. And when he misses, it just looks really bad.
The upside versus the downside there's a pretty big gap. Okay, so you said, okay, I already asked you this, but so you said that you think the Cavs will, if you had to pick an over-under, you'd say 14 threes for the Cavs in game four. Let me ask you
Yeah.
this. If I had asked you before tonight's game how many threes we would make in game three, what would have you said? Something like
14
14.
again. I
Okay.
mean,
All right.
I'm not gonna, I don't overreact to,
You haven't up-adjusted your estimates there. Or maybe you used to think it would be 12 or 13, and now you're
I
saying
used to think
14.
at the end of the regular season I would have said like 12 or 13. I've upped it from there because they're
Okay.
just taking more.
Okay.
So yeah, I think 14 is pretty good.
Okay. All right. For the sake of argument, I'm going to take the over, and then we can discuss at the beginning of next podcast when hopefully I'm rubbing your wrongness in your face.
Actually, I
Let's.
picked 17 today, and you beat me on that. So,
Yeah, although they had already made like eight or something, right?
yeah, I
When
thought
you
they
made
would
that
cool down, but they did
bet.
not.
Yeah, I thought they would too, but I picked 17 because, or you picked 7. I can't remember.
I
In
picked
any case,
17, yeah.
I took the over. Yeah. Okay, so what do you think the Cavs' effective SRS is right now? Just we go through this a lot, but just quickly, SRS is a measure of team strength, and great NBA teams have an SRS of like 7 or 8. The team that wins the finals is usually around the 8. The Spurs and Warriors both have historically high SRSs this year, and they're like 10.5. And the Cavs at the end of the regular season was, I think, 5.8. So what do you think the Cavs' effective SRS is right now?
So I think they have an SRS f based on tonight's game or just in general?
Just in general, like let's say the Cavs were going to play
Effective or
20,
potential,
twenty.
like where
No,
I
let's
know
say
they
the
can
Cavs were
get.
going to play 20 games right now. What do you think
But
their
against
SRS?
whom? If it's, is it going to be against
Well,
the Hawks or the
it
Warriors?
doesn't matter because it's adjusted for opponent.
Well, I know, but I know. I think they're kind of playing down to the Hawks a little bit right now. At least tonight, it looked like for three
Okay,
quarters where they were playing down.
20 games against. Okay, they're going to play how many teams? They're going to play 30 games. They're going to play every team in the NBA once.
I would say like close to nine, actually.
9. So you think that they would be the best team in the NBA in almost every NBA season?
Yeah.
Okay.
Besides, obviously, the two historic
Yeah.
teams.
Historic, yeah. I would say like 8 or 8.5, but I'm encouraged with what I see, and we'll keep an eye on this. What do you think the Spurs and Warriors still have like their so I think the Spurs and Warriors' SRSs are a little bit higher than their actual effective team strength. I think they
I
have
don't know. I'm kind
some
of worried about
luck
the
this season.
Warriors, to be honest with you, because somebody had a chart and they looked at. So the x-axis was, let's see what it was. The x-axis was the SRS of the opponent that they faced in any single game in the 82-game season, and the y-axis was the margin of victory, and it actually had a positive slope, which means they
Right.
were kind of playing down to their opponent.
Yeah, one wonders if the Warriors are actually way better than they actually statistically appear to be. That's almost inconceivable, but it does seem like they had an on-off switch as well. Like they dominated every game that was close and late. So,
And every important game.
okay, so you think the Spurs and Warriors are still basically what they were in the regular
I would say
seasons, which
Spurs are
are.
actually a little worse than the 10 because their bench is so good.
Okay.
So their bench was destroying other teams' benches. But with the Warriors, I would say they're probably like 11-ish. And Spurs, I would actually put her like 9-ish.
Okay, next question. Do you think Tyronn Lue is holding anything back?
Yeah, I think so. Some offensive sets, I would imagine he's holding back.
My intuition is no-ish. I think that there may be some ingenuity that they have not needed to try because of the way things have been going. Yeah, I guess I think yeah, I don't know if he's holding anything back more than like what say the coaches of the what Popovich and Kerr are holding back. Like I don't think we have an
Oh yeah, I agree
advantage
with
in like
that.
the amount we're holding back versus some other team.
Oh sure, I agree with that. I think I just don't understand why Kyrie and LeBron just can't play off of each other. I mentioned it to you while we were watching the game that every time Kyrie's dribbling, it looks like LeBron's checked out and just standing in the corner.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's a lot more that those two guys can do together between the two and have a good synergy. But
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think they're
even
going
the
to find
numbers
that
show
this
this, they have
season.
some sort of anti-synergy.
Right. I just don't think they're going to find that this season. I think if
Yeah.
they can get an off-season, hanging out with each other, maybe. Okay, next question. this one's just silly. Do you think LeBron's going to obliterate any more fans in the stands this season? So,
The over under on that, huh?
did you see? I mean, you see that guy he
Yeah,
crushed
no,
at
I
the end
saw
of the
that
fourth
when
quarter?
oh,
It wasn't his fault. It wasn't his fault.
Mr.
He got.
Classy Jeff Teague when he pushed him. The
Yeah.
funny part is he was talking about who was talking about being classy. Was it he or Paul Millsap? One of them was.
I'm not sure. I'm fine with the Hawks' salt, by the way. I don't think they've been like particularly aggressive out there. They're getting their asses handed to them, and I think they've actually been like
I know, I
fairly.
just don't like it when someone pushes LeBron into the stands.
I
Just
know, but I mean, it wasn't like a hard malicious shove. It was a frustration foul.
It was, yeah.
And LeBron,
but
like,
he had a lot of momentum, right?
Because
he was
think
running.
LeBron may have exaggerated a little bit on the first step, and then he tripped a little bit. And in any case, like, I didn't feel like that was a particularly malicious foul. But yeah, he crushed that kid. The kid was fine. But
yeah, I'm just very protective of LeBron, as you know.
I know, you're like Mother Goose there. Okay, so obviously, I don't think he's going to kill anyone else.
I don't think, yeah, because the last time I remember was when that lady got knocked down.
That lady, yeah,
the
Jason Day's wife. Yeah,
wife
PGA, number three PGA player in the world, Jason Day's wife. I think he's number three. Anyway, okay, last question, and I think this is sort of an interesting one. Would you rather the finals start tomorrow or normal?
Normal. I want the Cavs to have some time.
Okay.
To figure
you think they have some more upside? Yeah, okay. And obviously the Warriors and Spurs could also have some upside.
Actually, no, I'll take it tomorrow because Steph is hobbled.
Yeah, so I thought you might say that. Let's say Steph was healthy.
Okay, no, then I'll take the... Yeah, because, I mean, there's obviously some chance of injury to one of the Cavs. One of the important
right.
Cavs. But
right.
No, I'll take the normal.
Yeah, I mean, I mean it more from, like, an aspect of... So I think we have some upside yet to realize.
Oh, I agree. Exactly,
but,
that's why.
But yeah, but so do the Warriors and Spurs. But I think we have more. And, yeah, so it sounds like you think the same.
Yep.
Okay. All right, well, that's it for today's show. This has been episode 22 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. The Cavs play again on Saturday? No, Sunday.
Yeah.
And I believe it is a 3:30 Eastern start. So we will be recording a show after that. And go Cavs.
Yeah, I think it's prime.